This is Audible.
HarperTeen and Harper Audio present Only a Monster by Vanessa Len, performed by Vera Chock. Prologue. When Joan was 6, she decided she was going to be Superman when she grew up. She told Dad she needed the costume so she could practice. Dad had never liked spending money, but he painted an S on Joan's blue t-shirt and found a red napkin she could use as a cape. Joan wore them to bed every night. Superman? Gran scoffed when Joan came to stay with her in London that summer. You're not a hero, Joan, she bent her grey head confidingly. You're a monster. She said monster, like being a monster was as special as being an elf. Gran was making up Joan's bed in the guest bedroom, and Joan was helping by stuffing the pillows into their cases. The room smelled like fresh laundry. Morning sun filled it to the corners. Monsters look like giant spiders, Joan said, or like robots. She'd seen enough cartoons to know. Gran sometimes told jokes without smiling. Maybe this was one of those times. But Gran's eyes weren't shiny with a held-in joke. They were serious. That's pretend monsters, she said. Real monsters look like me and you. Joan and Gran didn't actually look that much alike. Joan took after Dad's side of the family, the Changs. Dad had moved to England from Malaysia when he was 18. He had round, freckled cheeks and narrow eyes and smooth black hair like Joan's. Gran looked like the photos of Mum. She had curly hair that hung around her head in a cloud and green eyes that were too sharp for her face. Sometimes Joan saw that same suspicious expression on her own face in the mirror. The Hunt family look. Gran called it. Gran finished smoothing the duvet and sat on the edge of Joan's bed. It put her and Joan at the same height. Monsters are the bad guys, Joan said skeptically. In cartoons, monsters lurked under your bed. They had scary laughs that went on too long. They ate people. At school, Mrs. Ellery had told Joan that Chinese people ate cats. Joan had kind of felt like a bad guy then, but with the same bubble of resistance that she felt now. She wasn't. She wasn't! For some reason, that made Gran smile.
You remind me of your mum sometimes.
Joan didn't know what that had to do with monsters. Still, she held her breath, hoping Gran would say more. Mum had died when Joan was a baby, and Gran hardly ever talked about her. At home, there were photos of Mum above the TV and on the living room wall, but Gran didn't have photos of anyone in her house. She had paintings of fields and old ruins. Dad said she was clever, Joan ventured.
Very.
Gran pushed Joan's hair back from her face.
And stubborn. She didn't believe things without proof, either.
Before Joan could ask what that meant, Gran reached up into the air above them as if she were plucking an apple from a tree. The hairs on the back of Joan's neck rose, although she couldn't have said why. When Gran opened her hand, she was holding something that gleamed gold like the morning sun. A coin, but not a coin that Joan had ever seen before. On one side, there was a winged lion. On the other, a crown.
I know how you did that, Joan said.
It was called a sleight of hand. Joan's cousin Ruth had shown her how to do it with a button. You can make something appear and disappear by hiding it between your fingers and then flipping it into your palm. Gran dropped the coin into Joan's hand. It was heavier than it looked.
Can you show me? She said. Can you make it disappear?
Ruth's trick had been hard. Joan had only gotten it right twice, and she must have dropped the button 100 times. Still, Gran's face was expectant, so Joan put the coin into the arch between her thumb and forefinger, balancing it.
No, Gran said. The way I did it.
She moved the coin into the center of Joan's palm and closed Joan's fingers over it.
The monster way.
I'm not, Joan thought. I'm not a bad guy. And Gran wasn't either. Joan had spent almost every summer with Gran for as long as she could remember. When Joan had nightmares, Gran sat up with her. When Joan had found an injured bird in the park, Gran had wrapped it in her scarf and looked after it until it could fly again. A person like that wasn't a monster. Joan concentrated on the weight of the coin until she couldn't feel it anymore. She opened her fingers, showing Gran her empty palm. Gran's smile was warm.
The monster way, she said approvingly. She added, there's a rule that goes with that trick.
A rule? Joan said.
At home, with Dad, there were rules about what you should and shouldn't do. Stealing was wrong. Helping people was right. Lying was wrong. Listening to the teacher at school was right. The Hunts had rules too, but it was like they had agreed to a whole different set of them. Stealing wasn't a big deal, and neither was lying, as long as you were doing it to strangers. Paying debts was right. Being loyal to your family was right.
We hide in plain sight, Gran said. Do you know what that means?
Around them, the house seemed very quiet. Even the birds outside the window had stopped chirping. Joan shook her head. The warmth was still there, but Gran's expression turned serious. It means that no one can know what the Hunts are, she said. What you are. She lowered her voice. You must never tell anyone about monsters. Chapter 1 Joan smoothed down her hair and did a last mirror check in Gran's upstairs hallway. She had a date today with Nick. In the mirror, her eyes went soft and happy. Joan had been volunteering at the museum with him over the summer break. She'd had a crush on him all summer, but everyone at work had a crush on Nick. He'd asked Joan out yesterday, biting his lip and nervous, as if he thought she might say no, as if just being in a room with him didn't make her heart stutter. Now they were going to spend a whole day together, starting with breakfast at a cafe on Kensington High Street. Joan checked her phone. 1 hour to go. She was nervous too, she admitted. A waiting for the ride to start mix of nerves and excitement. She and Nick had been getting closer and closer over the summer, but this felt like the start of something new. Laughter rose from downstairs, and Joan took a deep, centering breath. Her cousins were already up. Their familiar, comforting bickering washed over her as she descended the stairs. "Best forged painting in the National Gallery," her cousin Bertie was saying.
"Easy," her other cousin Ruth said. "Monet's Water Lily Pond."
"That's not forged," Bertie said.
"I rest my case. You can't just say a random painting."
Joan was already smiling as she reached the bottom of the stairs. Most of the year, she lived with Dad in Milton Keynes. She liked her quiet life with him. But she liked this, too. The noise and clatter of Gran's place. She stayed with Gran every summer, and she looked forward to it every time. In the kitchen, Ruth was perched on the broken radiator under the window. At 17, Ruth was a year older than Joan and their other cousin, Bertie. But this morning, she looked like a kid. She was still in her pajamas. grey flannel bottoms and a Transformers t-shirt with the Decepticon logo. Big, beaky, robot mouth. Her dark curls framed her face.
Is there any tea in that cupboard?
Ruth asked Bertie. Bertie craned to check, one eye on his frying pan of mushrooms and tomatoes.
Only that smoky stuff Uncle Gus drinks.
He seemed to be dressed for a 1920s boating trip on the Thames, straw hat covering his black hair. All the Hunts had eccentric fashion sense.
That stuff tastes like a...
Ruth cut herself off as she caught sight of Joan in the kitchen doorway. She took in Joan's new dress and sleek hair, and her face lit up a slow illumination of glee.
Ruth,
Joan protested, don't start. But Ruth was already crowing, look at you!
You got a job interview?
Bertie asked Joan. I thought you were still volunteering at that museum.
I'm having breakfast with someone, Joan said.
She was already red. She could feel it.
She got dressed up for a date, Ruth said.
She put her hand over her heart. It's the ultimate nerd romance. They're going to the V&A after breakfast. They're going to look at medieval textiles together.
Nerd romance, Joan protested.
But she couldn't stop herself from smiling again.
You know the V&A has other stuff too. There's historical wallpaper, ceramics.
A story for the ages, Ruth said. She leaned back against the window, hand still over her heart. Two history geeks volunteered at a museum over the summer break, and then one day they're mopping floors together and they look at each other over their mops.
Joan snorted.
She went over to steal a corner of uneaten toast from Ruth's plate.
You should come help out sometime, she told them both. It's actually really fun. We learned how to repair broken ceramics the other day.
One day I'm going to record you so you can hear what you sound like, Ruth said. She made stiff robot arms. I am Joan. I love community service. I'm so square. I only cross the road when the green man says I can.
Yes, that is exactly what I sound like, Joan said.
Ruth grinned. She was a year older than Joan, but their relationship had always been flipped. Ruth saw rules as other people's problems. Joan was always playing the older sister, taking shoplifted things from Ruth's pockets and reshelving them, and dragging Ruth to the end of the street so that they could cross at the lights.
Aren't you a goody two-shoes, Ruth would say, but she was fond about it.
They'd known each other far too long to think they could ever change each other's natures.
Go on, Bertie said to Joan, and he sounded just as fond now.
He put the whole pan of mushrooms and tomatoes on the kitchen table.
Tell us everything.
Let us live the nerd romance vicariously, Ruth said. Joan kicked idly at Ruth's shoe.
I like him, she told them both.
Really? Ruth said, with the indulgent patience of someone who'd been hearing about Nick all summer.
She reached over to take a mushroom from the pan.
You know the rest. We're having breakfast this morning, and then we'll walk up to the V&A.
Uh-huh, Ruth said. And then are you two history nerds gonna sneak behind the exhibits and... She mouthed at the mushroom, licking it with exaggerated tongue curls.
Ruth, Bertie complained. I cooked those mushrooms.
Grand's dry voice sounded from the stairs.
Do I want to know?
Anyway, got to go, Joan said before the whole family could start up. I'll see you later.
And now Uncle Gus and Aunt Ada were coming down the stairs behind Gran.
Go where?
Uncle Gus said.
She has a date,
Ruth called to him.
Wait, I want to hear about this,
Aunt Ada called back.
Joan fled the kitchen. Talk to you later, she yelled from the hallway.
A date with who? She heard Ada ask the others.
That boy she has a crush on, Ruth said.
Bertie belted out in song.
She's going to kiss her summer crush in front of the medieval textiles.
Joan cracked up. Bye! Goodbye! She shouted and shut the door. She was still smiling as she walked up Lexham Mews. She turned onto Earl's Court Road and then Kensington High Street. It had been a warm summer and the hazy air promised another hot day. A message from Nick popped up just as Joan got to the cafe.
I'm on the tube!
Joan took a deep, happy breath. He was running early too, less than 15 minutes away. She bit her lip. She still couldn't believe she was about to spend a whole day alone with him. She got a cup of tea at the counter and took it over to a table by the window. Sun streamed in, warm against her face. She went to message Nick back, and as she did, she felt a rush of air as the door opened behind her. There was a thundering crash then that would have caused an eruption of jeers in Joan's school lunchroom. Joan turned, along with the rest of the cafe. A man was standing in front of an upturned table, eyes wide and bewildered. Bits of broken plate and glass lay strewn over the floor. He blinked down at the mess, as if he thought someone else had made it.
I want to buy flowers, he mumbled.
A waiter near Joan groaned.
Not this again.
He raised his voice to one of the other staff members.
Ray, get the vacuum out. That drunk's back.
To the man, he said wearily.
You can't get flowers here. I keep telling you. There hasn't been a florist here for years.
Joan stood slowly. She'd recognize the man.
Hey, he isn't drunk, she told the waiter.
Mr. Salt was Gran's neighbor from up the road. Last week, he'd wandered into Gran's house in this same confused way. His daughter Ellie had been in tears when she had arrived.
He has dementia, she'd said to Gran. It's got so much worse since Mum died last year. He doesn't even know what year it is half the time.
Mr. Salt? Joan went over to him, her shoes crunching on broken glass. There was glass everywhere. Mr. Salt was wearing soft slippers. Inside them, his feet were bare. He must have walked all the way from his house wearing them.
Oh, where's the florist?
Mr. Salt's face creased in confusion. He was a big man in his 70s, bald, with hulking shoulders. Right now, though, he was all hunched up like a little boy. He looked like he wanted to cry. Joan tried to coax him back from the glass. Why don't I call Ellie? She suggested to him. She can get you some flowers, and you can go home. She glanced at her phone. Nick would be here in around 10 minutes.
It's all right, she said to the waiter over her shoulder. I'm going to call his daughter.
She touched Mr. Salt's arm, tentative, and, to her relief, he allowed her to guide him away from the glass and out the door. Outside, it was a sunny day with a rare, cloudless blue sky. It was early enough that most of the shops on Kensington High Street were still closed.
Let's find you somewhere to sit, Joan said to Mr. Salt.
But when she looked around, she couldn't see any benches. She settled for a strip of wall between the cafe and the bank next door.
Do you want to lean against the wall while we wait? She suggested.
Mr. Salt blinked at her.
We're going to wait here, Joan explained. I'm going to call Ellie and we're going to wait for her.
Mr. Salt stood there, still staring down at Joan without expression. Joan felt a strange sense of unease then. Something terrible was about to happen, she thought, and then wondered why she'd thought it.
Mr. Salt, she said. He staggered, and his hands shot out, grabbing Joan's shoulders. She jerked back instinctively, and his heavy grip tightened.
and then it was weirdly like they were scuffling, even though Mr. Salt was only trying to get his balance back. Joan looked over her shoulder, trying to see through the cafe windows, but she was angled away, closer to the bank. A motor vroomed tinnily to life from inside, a vacuum cleaner. Joan wouldn't be able to get help from the cafe. She looked the other way, the way Nick would walk up, but Kensington High Street was emptier than she'd ever seen it. Mr. Salt bore down on Joan's shoulders. Joan's legs shook with the effort of holding him up. She was ridiculously reminded of the time she'd tried to take the mattress off her bed and had collapsed under its weight. She'd had to shout for Dad to get it off her, and he'd laughed so hard afterwards he'd had to hold on to the doorframe. She tried to laugh now. It came out high and nervous. She wasn't scared, she told herself. Not exactly. Mr. Salt was just confused and trying to get his balance back. In a second, they'd both find their feet. She wondered how she'd even tell Nick about this when he arrived. This weird thing happened before you got here. Mr. Salt kind of lost his balance, and so did I, and then we were just stumbling around in the middle of Kensington High Street together. Except that then, Joan's knees buckled. Mr. Salt! She blurted. Mr. Salt frowned. For a second, awareness sparked in his eyes. He pushed Joan away from him with a confused shove. She stumbled backward, flailing her hand up to grab his shoulder, his shirt, anything to keep her feet. Joan's back hit the wall with a painful thump, and for a moment, all she could see was that cloudless blue sky. And then, there was a kind of snap. And everything went dark, as if someone had switched off the lights. Joan could hear herself breathing loudly. She felt totally disoriented. She reached out in the dark, trying to feel for where she was. And as she did, flares of light roared past her, making her flinch. She stumbled back. The lights had been a car. Her eyes were beginning to adjust now, but the feeling of disorientation was only getting worse. She couldn't make sense of what she was seeing. On the other side of the road, there was a burger shop. Joan knew it well. She'd walked past it dozens of times before. She turned slowly. The cafe stood behind her, dark and empty. There was a closed sign in the window. She hadn't moved, she realized. She was still here, still standing on the exact same spot where Mr. Salt had pushed her. Only Mr. Salt was gone. Joan stared. A moment ago, she'd been waiting for Nick to arrive. The sun had been shining on her face. It had been morning. But where the sky had been blue, now it was black. The stars were out. The moon. It was night. Chapter 2. Joan looked disbelievingly at the black sky. Night had fallen, not with a gradual sunset, but in an instant, as though someone had thrown a blanket over the world. She couldn't make sense of it. A moment ago, she'd been waiting for Nick to arrive, and now... She went to check the time and realized, with another rush of confusion, that she wasn't holding her phone. She had a vague memory then of it slipping from her grip in the scuffle. A car zoomed past, lighting up the street. The spot where her phone had fallen was empty. Joan took a stumbling step, disoriented. A curl of panic started in the pit of her stomach. She was supposed to meet Nick here for breakfast. But now the cafe was empty, chairs stacked inside. Her eye caught on that closed sign again. God, what had just happened? Mr. Salt had pushed her and then... Joan tried to remember. And then nothing. Then it had been night.
The sound of voices made her start back. A group of girls tottered past her along Kensington High Street, chatting and laughing. They were all dressed up and clutching at each other to stay upright, like they were in the middle of a big night out. "Oh, sorry," one of them said when she walked too close to Joan. Joan's heart skittered as she watched them go. It was obvious that they were just enjoying their night. Nothing strange had happened to them. Joan closed her eyes, hoping the world would right itself when she opened them again. That it would be morning, that Nick would be walking toward her up the road. But when she opened her eyes again, the sky was still black. The shops of Kensington High Street were still closed for the night, their windows dark. And it felt like night. The temperature had dropped at the same moment that the world had gone dark. Joan pinched her arm. It hurt. The air was cold. The ground under her feet was firm. She wasn't dreaming. But if this was real... Joan turned back to the dark windows of the shop behind her. There was a sign there with the cafe's hours, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. If this was real, that meant there was a gap in her memory at least 13 hours long. Joan pushed down a surge of panic. She reached into her pocket for her phone, needing to talk to Nick, to tell him she was here, and then remembered again that her phone was gone. Another surge of panic hit her, and then it was too much. She was alone in the dark with no memory of the day. She suddenly wanted to go home to Gran. She felt like a little kid again, like she'd fallen and hurt herself. Like if she could just get home, Gran would give her a hug, and then everything would be okay. Joan stumbled back down Kensington High Street and then Earl's Court Road. All the familiar streets looked different in the dark. The shops were like empty shells. What time was it? It felt late. What had happened? Had she been knocked out? Had she been drugged? Had she imagined it all? Each possibility scared her more. In a rush of panic, she stopped and patted at her clothes. She was still fully dressed, she discovered in relief, still dressed for her date with Nick, sundress and sandals. Could she be sleepwalking? She'd never done that before. But underneath all her speculation, there was another question, one that she was afraid to think about too much. What did Mr. Salt do to me? Mr. Salt's house loomed near the corner of Lexham Mews. Joan cringed away from it, afraid Mr. Salt might come out the door. She broke into a run, tripping on the uneven path outside his house. And then she ran the rest of the way back home, tumbling onto Gran's doorstep in the dark. She got the door open and then locked it behind her. She checked the lock and then checked it again. When she turned, she expected to find the house dark and quiet. But to her surprise, there was a well of light coming from the kitchen. Someone was still awake. Gran was at the kitchen table, drinking cocoa. More cocoa bubbled on the stove. Joan hesitated in the doorway, not sure if she was in trouble. The clock said it was just past 1 a.m. Dad would have freaked out if Joan had stayed out that late without calling him. "Hello, love," Gran said without looking up. "Come and sit down." There was another mug of cocoa on the table, Joan saw now. It was steaming. Joan didn't know what to say. "Gran, I think maybe I was drugged. Or maybe I hit my head and got knocked out." Neither of those things seemed true. "Something happened," she managed. "Someone did something to me." "Sit down, my love," Gran said more gently. She slid the cocoa over to Joan. Joan sat slowly and put her hands around the mug. It was very hot. Gran looked softer than usual in the dim light. She was in a flannel dressing gown, and her hair was a curly grey halo. She waited for Joan to sip the cocoa, and then she asked, "What happened? Tell me exactly." Joan tried to remember, and panic bubbled up inside her again. The whole day was missing from her memory. There was just nothing there. "Mr. Salt did something to me," she said. "He did something. He pushed me against the wall, and then..." She hit the blank place in her mind again. "And then I don't remember," the words blurted out of her. "Gran, I don't remember anything that happened since this morning."
"He pushed you," Gran sounded reassuringly calm.
"Did you push him back?"
"What?" Joan said. It was such an unexpected question that for a moment she didn't know how to answer. "No."
"But you touched him."
Gran put a finger against the nape of her own neck.
"Here."
Joan started to say no again and then remembered how she'd flung her hand up to keep her balance. She had a vivid sense memory of the edge of her hand knocking against Mr. Salt's neck.
"It was day," Gran said, "and then it was night, with nothing in between."
Joan stared at her. That was exactly what it had been like. "He did something to me," she whispered.
"He didn't do something to you," Gran said. "You did something to him."
"What?" Joan said.
"My love, I told you what you were when you were 6 years old."
Joan shook her head. She couldn't take her eyes off Gran's face. Gran leaned closer.
"You're a monster, Joan."
On the stove, cocoa was still bubbling. Joan could hear the slow tick of the clock. The whole world seemed to have narrowed to Gran's green eyes.
"You mean I can make things disappear?" Joan said.
"Disappear and reappear?" She wasn't very good at it. If anything, that ability had diminished over the years. Gran and Uncle Gus could make whole paintings vanish, but Joan had never managed anything much bigger than a coin. In the yellow kitchen light, Gran's eyes were as luminous as a cat's.
"That's the Hunt family power," she said. "Each monster family has its own power. But all monsters have a power in common. We can travel. That's what you did."
"Travel?"
"Humans are bound in time," Gran said. "Monsters are not. You stole time from that man, and then you used it to travel from this morning to tonight. You traveled in time."
Joan wanted to laugh. She wanted Gran to start laughing, but Gran was just looking at her.
"What are you talking about?" she said.
"Life," Gran clarified. "You stole a few hours of life from him."
"No," Joan said. She didn't understand.
"You didn't take much," Gran said. "Half a day, perhaps. He'll die half a day earlier than he was supposed to."
"No! Stealing life from humans. Joan's family had always called themselves monsters, but Gran was making it sound like they were monsters, like they preyed on humans. Yeah, they shoplifted sometimes. Ruth could pick a bike lock. Bertie snuck into movies through the back door. But they weren't monsters."
"I didn't," Joan said. "I didn't steal life from him.
I wouldn't. None of us would. And traveling in time, well, that's..."
Joan saw Uncle Gus's hat then, on the kitchen bench. It was like all of Gus's hats, beautifully kept. This one was a chestnut colour with a rich brown band. Gus was slimly built with a kind of 1950s style. He liked sharp suits and hats. Even his hair was old-fashioned, neatly smoothed and parted to the side.
Joan thought about what Aunt Ada had been wearing yesterday morning. Ada had an eclectic wardrobe, and Joan had always liked it. Yesterday she'd been up early, wearing a mechanic-style jumpsuit and a scarf in her hair with a knot at the top. The day before, she'd been in a white dress, like she was going to a 1920s garden party. Like she was going to travel back in time to a 1920s garden party. Joan pushed away from the table. The scrape of her chair was loud in the silence. "Joan," Gran said. Joan gripped the edge of the table. She shook her head again. She didn't even know what she was trying to deny. Gran held out something. It was Joan's phone, the one she'd dropped in the scuffle with Mr. Salt. The screen was cracked.
"Don't forget the rule," Gran said. "No one can know what we are, what you are. You must never tell anyone about monsters."
Upstairs, Joan's room was just as she'd left it that morning, bed unmade with her pajamas strewn over the pillow. She stared down at her phone, at the long, jagged crack across the screen. Someone had turned it off. Gran had known to wait up for Joan tonight, and apparently she'd known to retrieve Joan's phone as well. Joan swallowed. She turned her phone back on. When it lit up, she felt like a bucket of cold water had been thrown over her. There were messages from Nick. She wanted to cry suddenly. She'd wanted to spend the day with him so much, and she'd missed their date. Not only that, but she'd hurt him. She'd stood him up. Throat tight, she scrolled through the messages. The first was the one she'd seen that morning. She'd been about to answer it when Mr. Salt had arrived. "I'm on the tube."
"I'm here."
"Everything okay? Are we still having breakfast?"
"Joan, are you okay?"
Joan swallowed around the lump in her throat. The first message had been sent at 7:39 a.m. The last at 6:23 p.m. She stared at her phone, not sure what to say. In the end, she went with, "I'm so sorry. I'm okay. A family thing came up." "You stole time from that man," Gran had said. "And then you used it to travel from this morning to tonight. You traveled in time." Joan sat heavily on her bed. Her first terrible instinct was to put her arms over her head and block everything out. This couldn't be real. She couldn't bear it to be. Gran had said that Joan had stolen time from Mr. Salt, that he was going to die earlier than he would have because of her. But that couldn't be true. Joan wouldn't hurt him. She never would. And the rest of it was just impossible. But the alarm clock said 1:15 a.m. That was real. And Joan had left for the cafe not an hour ago. That was real too. Monsters. Joan's family had always called themselves that. Why hadn't Joan ever asked why? She watched the alarm clock blink. The minutes ticked over at the same speed they always did. 1:45 a.m. 2:30 a.m. It felt unnatural to be this wide awake so deep into the night. It felt like being jet-lagged. And that thought brought memories with it, like how Ruth sometimes seemed hyper and then an hour later exhausted enough to fall into bed and sleep all night, like how Bertie could change outfits 5 times in a day. Ruth and Bertie, if this was true, then they'd known all along. They'd stolen life from people. "He'll die half a day earlier than he was supposed to," Gran had said about Mr. Salt. Gran hadn't even seemed to care, like she really was a monster. The horror of it was unbearable. 6:30 a.m. 7:30 a.m. Sometime after that,
Joan must have fallen asleep. She dreamed that she was outside the cafe again with Mr. Salt. Only this time, when he pushed her, she turned and put her hands around his neck and squeezed. He choked and struggled, but as big as he was, she was somehow stronger than him this time. And then, like a flicked switch, day turned into night. Mr. Salt's voice came out of the darkness. "You're a monster!" Joan woke up with a start. The curtains were open, and the sky outside was startlingly white. Joan reached up to cup her own neck and felt the fragile flex of it when she swallowed. What kind of dream was that? What kind of a person would have a dream like that? Downstairs in the kitchen, Ruth was eating toast with Marmite. The kitchen clock said 3:30. Joan couldn't make sense of it. Ruth was eating breakfast. It was bright outside. The clock said 3:30. Those things didn't go together. And then her sense of time abruptly reoriented. 3:30 in the afternoon. Ruth looked up.
"Hey," she said. "I can't believe you didn't wake me up when you got home. Tell me about your date with the hot nerd. Tell me everything."
She sounded so normal that Joan felt another swoop of disorientation.
"Was it amazing?" Ruth said. "Did you?"
She pursed her lips in an exaggerated kiss. "I missed it," Joan heard herself say.
"You missed it?"
Ruth's amusement faded.
"You missed your date? What do you mean? You were so excited."
Joan stared at her. Ruth's hair was all teased up, her jacket had big shoulder pads, and her makeup was a little smeared. She looked like she'd just come home from a 1980s costume party. Or from the 1980s. "It's true, isn't it?" Joan said slowly. Ruth was starting to frown.
"What's true?"
"We're monsters," Joan said.
"Real monsters. Our family steals life from humans."
Joan couldn't look away from Ruth's familiar face. She'd known Ruth her whole life, since before she could talk. Sometimes in the summers, they'd shared a room. She'd argued with Ruth over stupid things and made up with her again. Stayed up with her all night, talking about everything. Joan's throat felt chokingly tight. "Laugh," she thought to Ruth. "Please. Or be confused. Or deny it. Tell me I've lost it completely. Please, Ruth, please. Tell me it isn't true." Ruth opened her mouth and closed it, as if she wasn't sure what to say. It was strange to see her looking so uncertain. She was usually so confident about everything.
"Someone told you," she said finally.
Horror settled in the pit of Joan's stomach. It was true. What Gran had said last night was true.
"Why didn't you tell me?" she blurted.
The colour was leaving Ruth's face.
"Joan?"
"You've been stealing life from people," Joan said. "Gran has. Bertie has. The whole Hunt family." Joan wondered if she might be sick.
"Ruth, that's so wrong. That's really wrong. That's evil."
A horrible thought struck her. "Did you ever steal life from my dad? From me?" Ruth looked shocked.
"Of course not. How could you think that?"
Joan backed into the hallway. Her stomach lurched. She really was going to be sick.
"Hey," Ruth said. She scrambled out of her seat. "Where are you going? You'll want to talk to Gran, okay?"
"Talk to Gran?" Joan said, incredulous.
"I don't want to talk to any of you."
She needed to get out of this house. She needed to get away from her family.
"Joan, no."
Joan's voice cracked. She backed up more. "I never want to see any of you again." Chapter 3. Last night, Joan had run past Mr. Salt's house.
afraid of him. Now, as she passed it, she ducked her head, ashamed.
"He didn't do something to you," Gran had said. "You did something to him."
Joan wished suddenly and desperately that she could go home, really go home. Not to Gran, but to Dad in Milton Keynes. But Dad was on holiday in Malaysia right now, visiting the other side of Joan's family. A friend of Dad's was house-sitting for them. Joan felt as though she'd taken a step outside the real world. Over there, in the real world, Dad was in Malaysia. Over there, Joan's friends were in the middle of their summer break. And here, Joan's family had been stealing human life all this time, and Joan had never known it. Here, Joan had stolen life from someone yesterday, too. Joan turned the corner out of Grand Street and realized that she had no idea where she was going. If she called Dad, if she tried to go home to Milton Keynes, if she called a friend and asked to stay, there'd be questions. Questions she didn't know how to answer. With nowhere else to go, she found herself heading to Holland House, the museum where she'd been volunteering, to Nick. Holland House was an estate in Kensington that had been restored and transformed into a living museum. Each room was a perfect recreation of the house's Georgian heyday. Inside, costumed historians guided tourists around the house and talked about how the occupants had once lived. Outside, there were picnic gardens and a hedge maze for the kids. Joan had been volunteering there 3 days a week since the start of the summer. The work was mostly cleaning and gardening, but Joan loved it. History was her favourite subject at school. Her friends talked about being actors and singers. Joan's dream was to work in a museum. She walked the familiar route to Holland House. Around her, the world seemed surreally normal. The empty shelves along Earl's Court Road looked like ordinary shops again. Even the blue skies of yesterday morning had turned back to London's more usual gloom. It was as though yesterday had never happened. Joan reached Kensington High Street. On the other side of the road, the wrought iron gates of Holland House stood open. It was late enough in the afternoon that tourists were leaving for the day, streaming out into Kensington. It was strange to walk in against the current. Joan felt as if she were going the wrong way. Maybe she was. What would she even say to Nick when she saw him? From his point of view, she'd ignored his messages and stood him up. Then, today, she'd missed her volunteer shift without calling in. What if he didn't even want to talk to her? Joan swallowed hard at the thought. As she made her way up the elm-limed path to the house, tourists passed her with empty picnic baskets and souvenirs from the gift shop. Kids ran by, waving foam swords, their parents following more sedately behind. As always, Holland House came to view in pieces. Red brick broke through the veil of trees. Then white trim and shining windows, before the path gave way to smooth lawn and the house was revealed in full. The living museum of Holland House was a red brick and stone manor draped in ivy. The roofline was gently gabled and turreted, and on the lawn outside there was a fountain and roaming peacocks. Joan stood on the cusp of the lawn now. She'd somehow expected the house to seem different, but it looked just as it had 2 days ago. The whole world looked the same. Gran's kitchen and Earl's Court Road. It was Joan who'd changed. Now she knew that underneath the facade of ordinary London, there were monsters. Joan climbed the back staircase that the staff used. Afternoon sunshine filtered through the windows. The air smelled of sun-warmed polish and wood.
Nick was working in the library. It was a long gallery space that stretched the entire width of the house. Bookshelves and oil paintings filled the walls. At one end of the gallery, windows looked out onto a formal garden. At the other, the front courtyard. Joan hesitated in the doorway. Nick's back was to her. He was working alone, wiping down a picture frame with a soft dusting cloth. It was a little warm in the library, and his shirt sleeves were rolled up to the crooks of his elbows. Joan couldn't take her eyes off the sliver of bare skin between his collar and his hairline. "You touched him here," Gran had said of Mr. Salt. The surreal feeling was even stronger now. Joan remembered the first time she'd met Nick, her first day volunteering here. It had been a sunny Saturday at the start of summer. That morning, the crowds at the house had grown and grown until it seemed as if half of London were picnicking on the grounds and inching shoulder to shoulder through the hedge maze. On Joan's lunch break, she'd retreated to the house, climbed the back staircase, and found herself alone here in this library. She had closed her eyes and breathed in the smell of paper and books bound in leather. The reprieve had been an intense relief. A floorboard had creaked, and she'd opened her eyes again to find a boy walking into the library. He'd been a little older than her, 17, maybe. Her first thought was that he was classically handsome, clean-cut, with dark hair and a square jaw. And then he'd looked at her, and Joan had felt warmth roll over her as if she'd stepped into a sunbeam. Later, she would learn that he was kind, that he never lied, that he talked to everyone with the same respect and interest. Joan shifted her weight now, and the floorboard creaked. For a moment, memory and reality converged as Nick turned. Joan's heart skipped a beat as his dark eyes met hers. "I'm so sorry," she said. "I'm so sorry I didn't meet up with you yesterday." Nick pushed a hand through his hair. In some lights, it was almost black. Mr. Darcy Black, their friend Astrid called it. The window behind him had lightened it. "It's okay," he said. And the words were casual, but there was a vulnerable note underneath. He seemed braced for rejection. "There was a family thing," Joan said. "That wasn't exactly a lie, but it sounded like one. And I'm sorry I didn't answer your messages. I lost my phone." She heard herself trail off. "But I found it again." "You must never tell anyone about monsters," Gran had said. For the first time, Joan wondered if this secret would always stand between her and people she cared about. Here with Nick, and at home with Dad. She imagined Nick waiting for her at that cafe. She hadn't responded to any of his messages. But she knew him. He'd have waited and waited just in case. How long had he been there before he'd realized that she wasn't coming? "Are you okay?" he'd asked in his last message. She imagined him getting that curt message from her hours later that night. A family thing came up. "Joan?" Nick was still standing there, waiting for more. Now Joan saw the realization dawn on him slowly, along with the hurt of it. She wasn't going to give him a better explanation. Downstairs, doors were closing. Footsteps tromped to the main entrance. The last of the tourists were leaving for the day. Joan scrubbed a hand over her face. It was all too overwhelming. She needed something real. "I could..." She gestured awkwardly at the dusting cloth in Nick's hand. He blinked down at it, as if he'd forgotten he was holding it. "I could finish up in here. I know it doesn't make up for the shift I missed, but..." Nick searched her face. "You don't have to do that," It won't take long, Joan said. She went over to the cleaning kit. She could feel Nick's eyes on her as she rummaged for a cloth. She was being all weird, she knew, and she was only putting off the inevitable. The picture frame was wooden with rose carvings. Joan cleaned it as they'd been taught, getting the dust out of the fiddly carved bits, careful not to touch the painting itself. The silence was heavy. She tensed, waiting for him to say it. You really hurt me. That's not okay, Joan. Or maybe he'd just leave. She heard Nick's footsteps, slow, like the way she'd walked to Mr. Salt. He wasn't walking away. He stopped beside her. She felt overly aware of him, broad-shouldered and square-jawed. Joan. His voice was a soft rumble. What happened yesterday? Joan's throat felt thick. How often did her family do it, she wondered. How much life did they steal, and from who? Had Ruth stolen time from neighbours, from people Joan knew? She wished for a reckless second that she could actually confess everything to Nick. She always felt better when she talked to him. And what Gran had told her last night was so frightening that she needed to tell someone. But she could never tell Nick. He was human, and Gran had reminded her of the rule last night. You must never tell anyone about monsters. Downstairs, staff called goodbyes to each other. More doors were closing. People were going home. I just came here to say I'm sorry. Joan had to force the words out. Her throat felt so tight. She shouldn't have come here at all, she realized now. She hadn't known who to turn to, but she shouldn't have turned to Nick. The truth was, she'd stepped into a strange and dangerous new world last night, one Nick didn't belong in. Nick didn't answer for a long moment. Joan saw the emotions cross his face. Had he guessed that when she left, she wouldn't be back? Joan's chest hurt. I like him, she'd said to Ruth. But that wasn't what she felt. When she'd met him, it was like she'd recognized him. Like she'd known him her whole life. And when he'd asked her out, she'd felt like a new part of her had opened up. She hadn't even known she could feel like that. The thought of leaving now, of never seeing him again, made her heart break. But she knew that she had to. She knew herself. She wouldn't be able to lie to him. She'd already had a reckless urge to confess. She felt it still. Joan, Nick said. They were standing so close. Don't, he said. There was something raw in his dark eyes. Don't just go. So he had guessed. I have to, Joan thought. I don't trust myself around you. I'm scared of what I'll tell you. I'm scared of what I am. But when he said, please, Joan found herself nodding. Staff weren't supposed to stay after hours. Joan felt strange about breaking that rule. She was usually a letter of the law kind of person, and Nick was too. They retreated to the far end of the library to sit side by side on the bare wooden floor under the window, where they couldn't damage anything. Nick found a hazelnut Dairy Milk bar in his bag and laid down his jacket as an improvised picnic blanket. Wouldn't want to drop any crumbs, he said solemnly. His collar slid down as he smoothed out the jacket, and Joan tried not to look at his pale neck. Nick's fingers brushed against hers as he passed her the chocolate. Joan suppressed a flinch. She'd taken time from Mr. Salt just by touching his neck. She would never forgive herself if she hurt Nick like that too. By tacit agreement, they avoided the topic of yesterday. Instead, they made halting small talk. Were you gardening today? Joan said.
It came out sounding as awkward as she felt. There were 100 unspoken questions in Nick's eyes, but he answered her. Still doing that audit for the insurance company. He'd been born in Yorkshire and still had a faint northern accent. It sounded stronger when he was tired. Joan could hear it now.
I catalogued that room you like, with all the little paintings.
The miniature room, Joan said. It must have taken him ages to catalogue all the curios.
That was a 2-person job, and he'd had to do it alone today. No wonder he was tired.
She looked down at the floor. Her guilt felt like a live thing inside her. She'd hurt Mr. Salt yesterday. She'd hurt Nick. She might not have intended to, but she had. Was this what monsters did? As they exchanged more awkward small talk, the air felt heavy with unspoken things. The conversation they weren't having seemed louder than the one they were. Joan drew her knees up. Around them, the house got quieter and quieter, until even the settling creaks of the floor seemed to still. They were the only ones left in the house. Across the room, the late afternoon sun splashed against the half-dusted painting.
I didn't finish dusting the frame, Joan realized. There was half an hour of work left on it. I'll do it before we go.
Nick's voice was gentle. I'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow? Joan didn't know how to think about tomorrow. She could barely imagine tonight. She let her head fall back against the wall. The painting was nearly life-size, but from here it looked like one of the miniatures. It was a portrait of a man in Regency-era hunting clothes. He was standing under an oak tree, chin at a haughty tilt. Nick followed Joan's gaze.
Astrid calls him Hottie McTottie, he said, and Joan was surprised into a laugh. To be honest, though, she'd always thought the man in the portrait looked more cruel than anything. There was a corpse of a fox at his feet, and the tip of his shoe was on the fox's neck. The artist had painted his eyes as cold and predatory.
They say he once owned the house, Nick said. Joan pictured all the empty rooms around them.
Can you imagine what it must have been like when just one family lived here? She wondered. So much space.
Nick looked up at the ceiling, a series of skylights interspersed with silver stars against evening blue.
I can't imagine growing up here, he said. My family had a tiny place when I was small. 8 of us in a 2-bedroom flat.
He sounded more relaxed as he said that, more like they were having a normal conversation.
8? Joan said, surprised. He'd spoken a little about his brothers and sisters before, but Joan hadn't realized there were so many of them.
3 brothers.